In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman. Wonder Woman. Batman. Aquaman. And those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me once again for this episode is my super friend, Terry O'Malley. Hi, Terry, and welcome back.
Hi, Rob. I'm glad to still be here in the Hall of Justice.
Yeah. I am very happy to have you back here for part two of this story. As I mentioned a while back, I don't read ahead on the Super Friends comics. I read them all as a child, but when I'm going back and rereading them for this show, I'm not shooting ahead. I'm just reading them kind of one at a time. So when I got to the end of number 12 last month, I was like, oh, there's a part two here. I didn't even realize that. And so I've kind of made it an unofficial rule that if someone, whoever guest joins me for part one, I invite them back for part two. And so even though these two stories are connected very tangentially, I still felt like, you know, anything where you've got somebody at the end of the page of the first part going, hey, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, join us for part two. I'm like, that's a part two. So I'm happy to have you back.
Thank you. I am the fortunate recipient of this rule.
Absolutely. So the story we're going to talk about is from Super Friends number 13, The Mindless Immortal. It's, of course, by E. Nelson Bridwell, Ramona Fraiden, and Bob Smith. It was on sale May 23rd, 1978. And before we get to the story proper, Terry, I want to ask you, what do you think of this cover? We have this, again, you'll see it on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You've got all the Super Friends, and they're in this cavern, and we see this giant creature looming in the background. What do you think of this?
That's a pretty awesome cover. It's funny and it's dramatic.
Absolutely. We talked about the one last month, which was kind of an okay cover.
Yeah.
It wasn't anything great, but this is really fun. Is that you've got this giant green mole popping in through the background. All the Super Friends are looking down into this hole, and it's only Batman that's saying, Wonder Woman is like, what a strange place for a mine shaft. And Batman's like, that's no mine shaft, that's a burrow. And it's sort of funny that whoever wrote this cover copy, I'm assuming it's E. Nelson Bridwell, he's assuming that kids know that a burrow is what a thing a mole makes.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that's a mole hole or whatever. Yeah. He says that's a burrow. You have to kind of know, so that thing in the background is a mole and that's what's made the burrow. That's why Batman is exclaiming like that. So, but it's really beautifully colored. I love the slight underlighting on the mole. You've got, yes. he's green, but there's a slight yellow tint coming from below. It's really sharp.
Yeah, they're underground. It's very, as opposed to the last issue's cover, really weren't sure where the scene was. This is
right. Really
underground in some sort of hole. But there is some sort of mysterious light source.
Yep.
So all of our super friends are well lit, and that light seems to be extending upward until this mole with the malevolent red eyes.
And his little teeth.
Yeah, those, like that. Those perfect rodent front teeth, those gnawing teeth.
It's great. I love it. I actually love it.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it's a really, really good image. Good job, Ramona Fraiden. So last month, Terry, we got into Terry's history with the Super Friends comic. We don't need to cover that now. We can get right to the story. So as I said, this issue went on sale May. Why can't I say that? This
because this so was just before the DC implosion of 1978.
Was it? When was the DC implosion? What was the date? Was that like May 25th or something?
It was really a rolling event. There's a wonderful history on the old website, Dial B for Blog, where the proprietor went through all the chain of events, including the blizzard of 78, which was in February.
Right.
And that delayed a lot of books going to the printer, coming from the printer, going to the distributor, all that stuff. The whole chain, the whole supply line of comic books from DC was severely impacted. Oh, I'm sorry. I hate using impact as a verb. It was severely affected. And that just had a ripple effect over the months. So that by the time those books got out and the sales figures came back, it looked terrible because the books weren't there. They weren't selling. And so the axe came down by the end of the summer, because this was the summer the ads were the DC explosion. So the books all increased in price. They all had backup features. 14-year-old guys like me were super excited to see all these cool backup features going to be coming from the books, and then it was all gone.
Never happened. Yeah, we will see the effect of the backups in the very next episode of For All Mankind, because the Super Friends will pick up a backup starting next issue. But yeah, I guess this is just before the big implosion. Has that character, the Odd Man, ever appeared? Remember that character?
Yes.
He was in that ad. He was the only character that never actually. That was a new character.
Yeah.
Did he ever show up anywhere?
He did, because the story had been completed. So it was eventually published in one of the dollar comics of Detective Comics.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I remember seeing that ad with all the characters, wonderfully drawn. I think it's by
Joe State.
Joe State and Dick Giordano. And I'm like, oh, that looks good. And then I'm like, that guy in the back. Who's that guy in the back? Who's that guy?
Yeah, Hawkman, Enemy Ace, the Amazons.
Deadman, OMAC. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was a cool ad. That was big. So, all right, cool. Someday we'll have to do a podcast about the DC implosion. That'd be a fun episode. Series of episodes. So anyway, all right, let's talk about the Super Friends. As I said, it was on sale May 23rd, 1978. It starts with a man calling himself Dr. Mist appears on the Trouble Alert with an amazing story to tell. Mist explains that the giant mole responsible for TNT and Dan the Dynamite's near catastrophe, see last issue, is the last of its species and remained undetected by humans. Then one day it stumbled its way into a cavern deep inside the Earth's core, where it came in contact with a mysterious energy that infused it with immortality. Mist warns that the creature might cause even further harm across the world as its giant form tears through the dirt under major cities. He then tells the Super Friends that there are three likely locations that the immortal will arrive at, and our heroes must – I was proud of that – and then our heroes must split up, and whoever encounters the beast, bring it back to Mist's mountaintop home. Wonder Woman and Robin find the mole in Death Valley but are overpowered. Wonder Woman tries to use her magic lasso to subdue the creature, but because it can't understand the amazing Amazon's commands, it has no effect. The mole then returns underground and quickly gets away. It resurfaces at the Grand Canyon, where Superman and Aquaman are waiting. Both heroes use their powers, but the beast is still too strong and it gets away again. At the Carlsbad Caverns, Batman surmises that if the mole makes it past Superman and Wonder Woman, he and the Wonder Twins are outmatched. So he starts devising a plan because Batman. Batman tells Jaina to change into a duplicate of the mole, which mollifies the creature. Being the last of its kind for so long, it's lonely and is docile when seen alongside another of its kind. The other Super Friends arrive and take the mole to Dr. Fist's Fortress of Mistitude. Mist tells the Super Friends that they must take the mole back to the location of the mysterious Earth energy. Only that will turn the mole back to normal. Superfan leads the way, digging a tunnel deep into the planet. The Super Friends find the mysterious energy and find themselves almost hypnotized, dreaming their fondest wishes out loud. Superman then tosses them all into the energy cloud, turning it back into what it was, mortal. Dr. Mist meets back up with the Super Friends, explaining he has been around for thousands of years, having been transformed by this selfsame energy. He then disappears into his mountain retreat, and the Super Friends head for home. All right, Terry, what did you think of this sort of one-off, sort of part two of this story?
This is a good, solid comic book. It's a well-paced, well-told. Everybody gets a piece of the action. And the things that drive plot, inexplicable devices, there are a couple of specific things I'll mention later. But it's all service to the story, and it's fine. No sidetrack issues, no foreshadowing of events. This is just, pick it up, read the story, one and done.
Yeah, I agree. I was pleasantly surprised how much I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the last issue, because part of it was it was fun, and I enjoyed seeing Dan the Dynamite and TNT again.
Yeah.
I will admit that it does end, it doesn't really end. It just stops in that, Dan I keep giving Dan and Dynamite top billing. He's the sidekick. TNT, I don't know why I do that. TNT and Dan and Dynamite really don't get a resolution. They just kind of get scrolled away to these locations, and then it's like, okay, let's move on to something else. So it's a little unsatisfying. But this, picking up where it is, it's like, oh, I really thought this was a clever story. And it has a little extra amount of pathos.
Yes.
For what you would expect a Super Friends story, to talk about the idea that being immortal sounds great. You know, oh, I'll never die. That sounds awesome. But it's also very lonely. And this poor mole creature, who is ostensibly the villain of the piece, really isn't a villain. He's just a creature who doesn't know the size of his own strength. Obviously, yeah. Moles are not meant to be the size of, you know, battleships or whatever. That's
he's just pretty, acting, you know, on his instinct.
Yeah, he's just doing what moles do. And he doesn't know that he's causing problems. And when he's encountered by these people that want to, like, capture him, of course he fights back and stuff. But it's – and then you've got this whole angle about with Dr. Mist. We find out what happens with Dr. Mist, that he's immortal. And then I love the bit at the end with the Super Friends where this mysterious energy makes them reveal out loud – like their greatest wish. Like, that's a really nice piece of characterization. You're really not expecting that in a Super Friends comic.
There's a lot of solid characterization for the Super Friends throughout the issue. Nelson's very conscious of how they react to and with each other and how events proceed. If we're going to go page by page, and we can do specific examples as we go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I said, and by the way, this is the last issue. The final panel was the introduction of Dr. Mist, his first appearance. And here he gets a full on, you know, he gets a full on guest feature. And of course, this is a character that would go on, have a greater life outside the Super Friends. I looked this up. He actually appeared in live action on the Constantine TV series.
No kidding.
Which is amazing. I mean, that is just like Dr. Mist. We nerds live in a just fantasy world at this point where Dr. Mist has made it into live action. It's just unbelievable. On page 4, one of my favorite things, I wrote this down in the notes, is when we see Dr. Mist's fortress. I love this mountain with this giant angry Dr. Mist head on top of it. It is like that's what Batman would want for his Batcave. It's just like, stay away, everybody, because his face is all contorted and angry. I love it. It's obviously there was never going to be a Global Guardians line of toys, but had there been, this had to be the playset, the Dr. Mistitude mountain. It's just fantastic.
I can't agree that Batman wants to keep his place hidden. But yeah, that face, what Ramona Freyden does with the Dr. Mist character, the first splash page, he's drawn with such weariness in his eyes. And even though I expect that the intended audience was not supposed to pick up on the fact that this giant stone head was the same person, I think it was pretty clear that Ramona drew the same man with a different expression.
Yeah.
And how she's able to do that so clearly and cleanly.
Yep.
It's great. That's why she's such a magnificent cartoonist.
Alex Toth is the one who said, you know that you are to separate sort of the men from the boys when you can strip away all the extraneous detail and you still have something solid. And Alex Toth near the end of his life really took that to a almost extreme where it was almost no detail. But Ramona Freyden is one of those people, and there's no coincidence that they both have a connection to the Super Friends. But yeah, Ramona Freyden is able to convey a lot of emotion and a lot of feeling with very few lines, and that's really part of the magic. Matt Groening talked about that for The Simpsons, that his character designs are so simple, and then all you have to do is add one line under an eye. And that suggests tiredness. And that's all you did. Just one line. That's it. And Freyden is just perfect at that.
Someone else who I really admire, I think, can do that is Jaime Hernandez.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
All his Maggie and Hopi stories, especially as he matured, it's so clear and precise and nothing extraneous.
Oh, man. Ryan did a show like this about if he ran DC Comics. If I ran DC Comics, I would start up another Super Friends comic and get the Hernandez brothers to draw it.
Brilliant.
Like, whatever money you guys want here, this is what it's going to look like. But right after we see the Dr. Mist Mountain, we see that E. Nelson Birdwell is layering in this character stuff because as the Super Friends split up, because of course they do, we see, we get some thought balloons, and we see that the Super Friends are kind of worried a little bit about this. And we see Wonder Woman think, I should be able to capture any animal. But then you get Superman saying, if it gets by Wonder Woman, it won't get by us. And then Batman won't have to deal with it. And then you see Batman thinking, chances are it will never reach Carlsbad. But if it does, how do we battle a beast that's gotten past Superman? I love all that. I like that detail.
Yeah, but hold on just a second, Rob. You misread the balloon. Superman thinks the kids won't have to.
Oh, change. The kids. That's right. The kids. Okay.
Yeah, he's not worried about Batman. But he's, you know, he's a mentor here. And I know a lot of in the world we live in now, the snarky sphere on the internet, love to take things like this and talk and, you know, see this character as being so full of himself or something like that. But I don't read it that way. These characters are confident. They know their own abilities and they know their friends' abilities. Why shouldn't Superman think he couldn't handle it? He can handle almost anything.
It's a giant mole. Why couldn't Superman handle a giant mole?
And why shouldn't anyone else think that he couldn't do it?
Yep.
So it's not bragging. It's not bragging if you can do it.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Right. I mean, it's this isn't exactly the same thing, but there was a Far Side cartoon once I remember. I think it was one that Gary Larson never used because he said nobody got the joke. But the whole gag was you were outside of a saloon and you saw a guy getting tossed through the window of the saloon like he was just in a fight. And in front of the saloon are all these horses parked, hitched up to the post, except one of the horses is not a horse. It's a bear with a saddle on it. And the joke was there's obviously somebody so tough that he rides a bear. And apparently he pitched that to his editor and the editor was like, I don't get it. And like he explained, he's like, no. That's the joke, is that obviously somebody is super tough, but we're not seeing – that's how tough he is. He's riding a bear. And the editor was like, no, we're not using that one. But, yeah, it makes total sense. It's like if Superman – if there is a creature you're facing that manages to get past Superman and Wonder Woman, if you're Batman, you're kind of like, what do I do? Throw a batarang at it? What am I going to do here? So, and there is a thought balloon later on in the story, which I'm going to mention that – did anger me very much, but we'll get to that as we get to. You can probably guess what it is. So, okay, so we get the sequence in Death Valley where Wonder Woman and Robin encounter the mole. This is, again, wonderfully drawn by Ramona Freyden. I love the cartoonishness of the mole. I love the giant claws that it's got. And then there's this – yeah, the snout. And then on page 6, there's this great panel at the top of Robin and Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman is laying on the ground, and her hair is blowing.
Yeah,
because the mole has kicked up all this dirt and wind, and it's again the extra detail to draw that as opposed to just having her sit there. Mm-hmm. But no, you really get this feeling of without any motion lines.
Yeah,
there's no motion lines. You really get the feeling of that this thing is just kicking up all this dirt. It's a fantastic little pose that she did of Wonder Woman,
and the way that her upstage arm is in silhouette, but there's that it gives a sense of depth
yep.
of her torso, the way her torso is twisted vis-a-vis her hips and her leg is drawn up. The other thing I like about this page is how Ramona draws Robin. Robin is not muscle-bound like Superman or Aquaman or Batman, but he has solid arms.
Mm-hmm.
He's not a skinny little kid either.
He's able to punch through a punching bag, as we saw just last issue.
That's right, but he's got these big – I like that his upper arms are big and thick.
Yeah. Hey, he's good. Yeah.
He's totally rendered.
He's working out. So then right after that, Wonder Woman tries to grab the lasso. I love it when she – another great little drawing by Ramona where she tries to lasso the mole and it flips her over and it flops her on the ground and she goes, fires of Tartarus. It slipped out of the lasso. I love how shocked she looks. Like she's like
–
her face is like, what? That's a great detail. It's fantastic. And then even Robin is like, I thought nothing could – I thought that metal rope of yours made anything that you snared obey you. And I like that Wonder Woman's like, well, yeah, but it has – it works because I lasso it and then it has to respond to my command. But if the thing doesn't understand what I'm telling it, it's useless. I like that E. Nelson Bridwell – I'm sure he wasn't the first person to come up with that, but that he thought it through.
Exactly.
You know, that it's like, oh, the magic lasso just doesn't do anything. Yes, it can snare anybody and stop them for a moment, but it works because Wonder Woman is issuing the command in tandem with the lasso. And if you have a creature that doesn't understand English, the lasso doesn't do anything. I think that's a great little detail.
or no capacity for understanding it.
Yeah, that's great. Perfect. Yeah.
Another thing I like about the last panel, I was thinking of this the third time I read through the story, how tastefully Ramona draws Wonder Woman. And I thought, what if Bob Ochsner had done that same panel? What do you think it looked like, Rob?
But yeah, they're right. There's a nice butt shot of Wonder Woman here. I mean, in the last panel. But yeah, there is, Wonder Woman's costume just inherently. Yeah, it all depends on how you draw it. You can make it look. Yep. If Mike Diodato is drawing Super Friends, you've got to put a warning on this comic. So then at the Grand Canyon, we get Superman and Aquaman face the creature. Aquaman gets a really nice whole page to himself, which I'm always appreciative of, where he calls in his Finny friends and the woo, 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 woo thing. And it works for a moment.
On the bottom of page 8, you see what Aquaman says?
By the Great Horn Spoon.
Yeah.
What is that? I had to look it up.
I didn't recognize it either. It's a novel, a children's novel, published in 1963 or 4.
The Great Horn Spoon?
Yes, it's called By the Great Horn Spoon.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, okay. Wow.
I was going to say that page. I forgot. Yeah, I was reading it. What does that mean? Is it a geographic thing? Something about of Cape Horn or something? Nope. No, it's a story about California Gold Rush. And I guess I never encountered that book. I never saw it in my library or school library or any of the children's literature I read back then.
It wouldn't have even occurred to me that that was anything. I just thought it was – I know that Aquaman was just road testing a phrase. You know, he was like, Neptune. Maybe try By the Great Horn Spoon, see how that works out. All right. Huh. Okay. Well, again, ENB pulling out the details here. The mole is able to outdo through the sheer force of energy. He's able to outdo Aquaman, and all the fish go flopping around, and it doesn't work. And then Superman decides, he's going to take it on. And he talks about it, he feels kind of bad. He punches the poor thing.
Yeah.
But he just hits it enough. Well, that should put him on ice. And then Moons of Krypton. Again, everybody's road testing new phrases. Moons of Krypton. I hit it with all I had, enough to shatter a small asteroid. But this thing isn't even phased. I got another panel of the big time heroes of this book are like, wow, this mole is really pretty powerful.
Yeah. Obviously, we got to get Superman out of action. So the mole has this mysterious force power thing. He can use up Aquaman and the fish and Superman.
Yep.
But when I read a story like this and how Superman is used, it's just Superman should be smarter than he should just swoop down and pick up this animal.
Pick it up, right? Don't try and knock it out. Pick it up.
This animal can't see you, Superman. Go downstream a couple of miles and swim up really fast underneath and pick him up. And I've been feeling that way ever since The Death of Superman was published. I don't know why Superman didn't fly down and pick up Doomsday and take him into outer space or something.
Throw him into the sun, for Pete's sakes. What are you doing? Yeah.
Come on. But I can make a case for it. We tie this in with what Superman was thinking previously. Oh, it's a mole. Okay, we should be able to handle this.
Right. Everybody's underestimating this thing, even though it's a giant mole.
Aquaman can do it. Okay. It's up to me. I'll just punch it.
Yeah. No, doesn't get him out of trouble. There you go. So now with the Carlsbad Caverns, I like that we get this moment of Batman saying, look, if it gets past Superman and Wonder Woman, we're really in trouble. Now, I don't like the fact that poor Aquaman is left out of that list. I'm a little frustrated. I understand Superman and Wonder Woman are the powerhouses of the team, but I did, as an Aquaman fan, I was a little like, oh, okay.
Well, let's give Batman some credit. He knew that Aquaman did not have a lot of space or Finny friends to work with in the Snake River.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Absolutely. I can't get too upset about it. So
and let's face it, if Superman or Wonder Woman can't handle a thing, who are you going to call next?
Yeah, neither can Aquaman. The Doom Patrol? I mean, who are you going to do? By the way, I like the extra, again, the added detail, panel 3 of the bats flying around in the cave. Just a nice little extra detail from Ramona Fraiden. So then the mole shows up.
It's like that Batman realizes we need a plan.
Yep.
And he's
very
also,
Batman.
Again, this is Batman the thinker. This is Batman the mentor.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's been his whole career, really. Yep. And so we need to know what we are going to do. Also, look at the colors in that third panel.
They look like color forms.
Isn't it beautiful?
Yeah. The Wonder Twins of Batman are green. And then you've got a stalagmite, which is pink, and then there's a purple one, and there's an orange wall and a yellow ground. I mean, it is candy colored.
And again, the mysterious light source underground. But
right.
You need that to see. They have shadows.
Yep. Yep.
Well, you know, he probably hung a bat lantern up someplace.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you see something in his utility. It's like one of those glow sticks in his utility belt or something. So then he said the mole shows up, and Zan turns into the ice barrier to keep the mole from going. By the way, again, I like just the simple line of drawing a creature that is blind, but just a little slit for an eye.
Yeah.
Like, you just know, that's it. Okay, can't see, so that's all. And then the thing – and I like this plan that Jaina turns into – a mole, a similar mole, and that makes the mole docile because the mole is finally seeing one of its own kind.
Yeah,
and
it's a terrific plan.
Yeah, instead of punching and trying to punch their way, because they realize, if Superman can't do it, we can't punch our way out of it, so let's use our tactics. It's really sweet, and it makes me, you know, it's like, oh, the mole is like a big dog at this point.
Yeah, and again, like with last issue, the Wonder Twins are strangers to the world. Too often in comic books, we encounter aliens who just instantly know how everything goes. I love stories where something is introduced to our world, and they're not used to how things go. For instance, I'm just now reminded of a Wonder Woman story from about this time, where Diana is replaced temporarily. There's a new championship on the Paradise Island, and Diana loses. So a new Wonder Woman goes to New York. But she has no idea how things work. So she tries to stop some crooks in a car, and she lands on the rear of the car and smashes right through the trunk, and the car continues. And she thinks, I just thought that the power source would be in the rear of the vehicle.
Hmm.
So little things like that I like in a story. And so in this, we're seeing these the Wonder Twins don't know much about Earth, so Batman has to tell them, like with the last issue. Aquaman had to tell Jaina, do this animal. Because they don't know all the animals.
Right.
What power does this animal have? What animal should I turn into? What? So that's what the superheroes' roles are for the Wonder Twins. How to use your powers. Let's how other people's powers work together.
Absolutely.
And we learn a little bit about that because now we learn that the Wonder Twins have to change and change back at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So we learn a little bit about everybody gets a bit in the story, and we learn a little bit about them.
Yeah, I love when the super friends show up. Zan has changed into a snowman.
Yeah,
and he's with a carrot, and he's still in snowman form. The super friends arrive, and I like that. That's not worth remarking upon. That the super friends have shown up, and Batman is talking to a snowman. They know that it's Zan. But it's just sort of funny. They're like, oh, Batman's talking to a snowman. Of course. You know, why wouldn't he? So the super friends head back to Africa, and they go to Dr. Mist's mountain, and he explains to them about this mysterious energy. And that's where we get this really interesting panel, or it's two panels, where they find this energy. And we see the super friends, and we see Robin saying, looking at that, I suddenly don't feel like making a joke. And the spinning flame has a weird fascination. And we see the Wonder Twins turn back into – by the way, through this whole thing, Zan is still as a snowman all the way until this moment. And then we get this really great panel of all the super friends talking about their fondest wish. And Aquaman says, never to worry about being away from water for too long, which, you know, thanks to Neil Posner in the Aquaman miniseries, he got his wish. They got rid of that power. But it's interesting that Batman says his fondest wish is to continue my fight against crime for centuries, millennia, till I wipe it all out. Robin asks to be immortal, never to grow old or die. Superman says, imagine immunity to all harm, even kryptonite. Wonder Woman says, I already have eternal youth, but to be invulnerable as well. And then you get Zan say, to live forever. And then Jaina says, the flame seems to call me. So I thought there was such a nice moment where we see all the super friends looking hypnotized. And you have to remember, again, this is Enelson Brutal wrote this comic for very small children.
Right.
It's kind of a thing for them to have to kind of reason out of why the super friends are acting this way all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really a nice little piece.
Yeah, really, so I thought it was sweet.
And the whole flame thing, of course, is just to get the story going, the mysterious force. It's not explained. We don't have to bury it forever. We don't have to acknowledge it or figure out where it came from. Let's just, this happens. Let's go.
Yeah. It's in the center of the earth. It's there and it makes you immortal. So you got to be careful. You know, you don't necessarily want to be immortal. So Superman tosses the mole into the thing. It turns back. I love that a minute it turns back, it just hobbles off. Like it's just like, all right, that was a weird day. Okay. Just cover. Okay. Whatever.
Back to digging.
And then we get the final page with the they're talking to Dr. Mist, and there's this great panel two. I love it when Superman looks at it, he says, that giant sculpture, it's you, isn't it? And Dr. Mist says, it is. How long was it carved? 5,000 years? 10? And Dr. Mist goes, approximately 11,000. And in the back, you see Xana Jana looking at each other. They're like, what? That's a great little
even
detail.
They realize how long that is.
I love it. It's so fun. It's such a great little, again, a great little detail for Ramona Freyden to throw in that, of course, the kids are like, is this guy saying he's 11,000 years old? Is that what's going on? And then they explain that why he's scowling. Because Batman says, I hardly recognize the expression, though, that scowl. And he thought it was you who projected your face onto the flame. And Mist says, yes, Superman, have I not dwelt here in an exile for almost 90 centuries? Because I know the dangers of the vast power I wield. I pray I may always keep it in control. And so that's what Dr. Mist looked like 11,000 years ago. But now he's all kind of mellowed out. And as you say, he's kind of sad. And he talks about that's why I had that head carved the way it was. And then he disappears and he leaves the Super Friends just to kind of basically fly home. And Wonder Woman, Robin says, you know, maybe even he's afraid of Mist is even afraid of dying. And Wonder Woman says, perhaps, but I wouldn't be too sure. Dick, by the way, calls him Dick. Thought that was nice.
And sometimes he called Diana earlier.
That's right. He says, sometimes it takes more courage to go on living. And that's the end of the story. And again, that's pretty meditative for a small kid's comic.
Sure is. A couple of things we didn't mention that I want to bring up that I really liked about the storytelling aspect. That's back at the beginning of the book, where via the obligatory narrated flashback, and Dr. Mist is explaining who this creature is and how he came to be, and about this mysterious flame in the middle of the earth. And so, of course, it's a comic book, so we can see the images of the thing happening. But Robin pipes up and says, hold on, mister. Where did you photograph that? You have movies that have cop an Oscar for special effects. That's the thing that has bugged me for decades about flashbacks and narrated events, and that the character who is hearing the story is somehow also seeing the story that we readers are looking at.
Right, right.
So they can, you know, and then this happened, and I was struck, and then that happened. And then someone in the story will say, yeah, but what about that green shoe he had on? How do you know he had a green shoe? but this explains it. Dr. Mist says, no cameras. What I wish to show you, I show. So there we go. We don't need hidden cameras. Even, you know, I was watching an old Batman show a couple weeks ago, and it was the cameras in the Penguin's jail cell. That I can buy. There's a security camera.
Sure, right, yeah.
But there had to be three different cameras, including one for close-ups, to make it interesting on television. But the conceit was it's all from the security cam. And we've seen that hundreds of times.
Oh, yeah.
TV shows. You know, security cams see everything from 40 different angles.
Oh, and
amazingly edited before you have to look at it.
Oh, in Star Trek III, there's all this footage from Star Trek II, and you're like, wow, these events were captured by some camera.
Yeah.
The exact way that we saw it in the audience. And then it happens again in Star Trek IV, where they show the footage of the blown up Enterprise. I'm like, was there a camera that was filming the Enterprise from outer space watching it blow up? Where did they get this footage?
Like, yeah.
Hey, all right, sure, fine. Yeah, that was nice of Robin. Good detective work, Dick, to notice that, to kind of be like, hey, wait a minute. How are we seeing this Michael Bay footage of an entire city being destroyed? There's a couple of things on the letters page I wanted to mention. One letter asks E. Nelson Bridwell if he was inspired by the Saturday morning cartoon, The Monster Squad, for his characters. And then at the end, this person says, I really love the art of Freyden and Smith. Where else can I find it? And Ian B answers, keep watching DC and they'll turn up. And I'm like, is he talking about the monsters or Freyden and Smith? I don't know which one he's referring to. The monsters, as we know, never did turn up again. unfortunately.
Fraydon and Smith.
I think he meant Fraydon and Smith, which they did do. They did do other. This was after Plastic Man. Fraydon and Smith had done Plastic Man. But yeah, they would go on and do some other things. But I guess I think that's what he's mentioned. And also, he does say that he's never seen Monster Squad. And he said, if anything, he was inspired by a story called The Complete Werewolf by Anthony Boucher. I'm completely unfamiliar with that story. I thought that was interesting that he fessed up to that.
Yeah, I think I heard Chris Franklin talk about that book.
Did you really? We'll have to remember what episode. That does sound like something right up of Chris's alley.
He'll let us know.
I thought that was cool.
I remember him talking, because after one of his werewolf movies, he was talking about a book, or even maybe a series of books. At this point, it's just the one. From the werewolf perspective.
Interesting. Okay. All right, I'll have to look into that. By the way, everybody, Chris Franklin is going to be on the show in a few moments, but I recorded that segment before I did this one with Terry, so I didn't have a chance to ask Chris about it, so we'll have to do it another time.
And now, over to Chris.
Yeah, exactly, because some of you are wondering.
Report.
Yeah, if some of you are listening to the segment, go, why don't you just ask Chris right now about The Complete Werewolf? Because podcasting scheduling is a harsh mistress.
I'm on a podcast with Chris Franklin.
The other thing I wanted to mention, which was funny, is that he prints a letter from someone named Adam Hirschhorn, who says, "Dear Nelson, is someone in your family named Norman Bridwell?" And he responds, "My father had a cousin by that name. Why?" And I'm like, couldn't you just write him a letter and ask him that? What you have to print it in the Super Friends comic for?
I mean, just realizing now, and I could look it up, but I'm not going to. Is Norman Bridwell the author of the Clifford the Big Red Dog books?
Is that who wrote those?
I don't know.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
Yeah. I thought that was curious as well. Why, one, that Nelson chose to print the letter.
Right. You could just, you could just.
The way he did.
Yeah. You could just do private correspondence. You didn't need to waste a couple of.
Unless, there was a very slow month for letters.
Maybe. Right. They could have run it at. Well, actually, there is one other thing I would have mentioned. The final letter where it says, I love that. It's from a guy named David. He says, love that Ramona Fraydon. She can really draw the characters. And then he says, I'm all in favor of Wendy and Marvin leaving. They were about as needed as Snapper Carr was in JLA. No tears for them. I was like, that's my guy, man. You always have a chance to diss on Snapper Carr. You're going to take.
Oh, yeah. I just looked it up. Norman Bridwell is the author and cartoonist for Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Interesting. Okay. Well, maybe they're related. I don't, in the world of E. Nelson Bridwell, they're related because everybody's related. That's how it works in E. Nelson Bridwell world. So interesting. Okay. So overall, I really thought this was a solid issue. Very fun. Got some added depth to it. And it picks up a nice story thread from part one and spins it onto his whole issue. We get a whole new character, Dr. Mist, who would go on to become kind of a big thing. Relatively big thing in the DC universe. But I think this was a really fun issue.
It really was. Thank you for sharing it with me.
Well, no problem at all. So who would you rate as the best friend? What character do you think came off the best in this issue?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I've said already twice that everybody gets to do something in the story. But I think I got to give it to Batman for thinking of the solution.
Yeah, I agree. As you said, they all get a nice moment. Aquaman gets a whole page to himself, which I'm always using his powers, which I'm always happy about. But yeah, Batman is the one that ultimately comes up with the solution when the brawn doesn't work. He thinks it through. So yeah, I got to give it to Batman. I think he earned his stripes for this issue. Villain roundup. There's no really villain roundup to do. The mole is not really a villain. He's just a nice mole. It just kind of got out of control. And the minute that he's back to a normal size, he just toddles off because he doesn't want to harm anybody because he's just a nice mole. So it's a cute little story.
He's the last mole.
He's the last. Now, okay, that part though. Why is he the last mole? Because he's just a mole. He's just
he's a giant mole.
He's a giant. Well, but I mean, is he okay? He's a giant mole. I mean, he's bigger than your normal. I mean, even when he's been reduced in size, he's still
a ground sloth.
Yeah, he's still. I guess so. I guess that is. He's still the giant. Well, that's a shame that they couldn't figure out a way to find. Maybe Superman could have taken him back to his interplanetary zoo or something, so he can hang out with the other unique animals or something. So, but otherwise, as I said, it's a really fun story, a nice conclusion to it. So, Terry, I guess it's going to do it. Thank you so much for joining me on part two of this story.
Oh, it was an absolute delight, Rob. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. So why don't you tell people where they can find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me at Ward Hill Terry on Twitter. I'm still neglecting my correspondence with all the Fire and Water shows. I'm sorry. And I'm on Facebook, and you can. My band is also on Facebook. The band is called Stop Calling Me Frank. And as of this recording, by the time you hear this, we have our brand new video for our Christmas song, which would have been last month, right?
Right. This will be just past Christmas by the time people hear this.
So go to the page, and you can see the video that we made in 6 separate locations.
Fantastic. That's really cool. And for all of you, I know anybody listening to this has already listened to the House of Frankenstein Christmas episode, which was a great bonus for Chris and Sydney to do for Christmas. And of course, that features a custom Christmas House of Frankenstein theme by Terry. And it was just marvelous. As I was telling Terry off air, Chris did not tell us ahead of time that that was coming. And it was just such a delight to hear. I love the theme anyway, but to hear a Christmas version, I thought was just extra special.
Well, the House of Frankenstein deserves it.
It does. It's really one of my favorite things we do here on the network. So, all right, well, that is going to do it, everybody. I want you to stay tuned. As I mentioned, Chris is going to be on the show in a moment because we are going to be back for a segment of For All Merch Kind. So
yay,
stay tuned. Yeah, we're doing For Merch Kind again. So stay tuned, everybody. And as I said, we're going to play a promo or a commercial spot. And then we'll be back with Chris Frank to talk about a piece of Super Friends merchandise. So stay tuned.
Light Bright, the toy that lets you create beautiful pictures with light.
Light Bright, making things with light.
Work with colorful pegs that glow with light, light bulb not included. Make people, animals, things, and with refills, Bugs Bunny or Bozo the Clown.
Light Bright, making things with light.
You can make lots of pretty pictures with Light Bright from Hasbro.
And we're back. And as promised, it's time once again for a segment that everyone loves on the show, For All Merch Kind, with Chris Franklin. Hi, Chris. Welcome back.
Hello, Rob. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm happy to have you back on For All Mankind to talk about a piece of Super Friends merchandise.
Yeah, and this is one I never knew about until you showed it to me.
I love that. I feel like I can very rarely spring something on you, but it's always cool when we can. Yeah, we are talking about, in this case, the Super Friends Light Bright Picture Refill Set. For those of you too young to remember, that's probably most of you at this point probably remember, Light Bright was this little box that came with it. It was like a little pegboard, and you plugged it in, and you put in different colored lights, and by rearranging them, you made different pictures. And there was a commercial and stuff, Light Bright, making things with light. And the whole concept of Light Bright and then the refills was the toy term, which was the razor and the razor blades. Chris, you know, you're familiar with that term. Do you want to explain to everybody what that term means in the toy world?
Well, that's a term that you can apply that famously to dolls like Barbie, where you buy a Barbie and she's just in the original Barbie was just in a bathing suit. But then you go buy, that's the razor, and then you go buy her outfits and those are the razor blades.
There you
go. Same thing for G.I. Joe and especially Captain Action.
Oh, yeah.
Captain Action and he's the razor. And then the Batman, Aquaman, Superman outfits are the blades. So that's how that works.
There you go. So that's the deal with Light Bright is that you got Light Bright and it came with a certain amount of colored little cell, these little plastic tubes, almost not tubes. I guess they were kind of like tubes, little pegs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just rearranged the pictures and it came with different colors. Now, of course, you know, if you got – I don't remember. I had Light – did you have a Light Bright when you were a kid?
Yeah. I think it belonged to my sister, but you know, I inherited it and, right. You know, we both had it and yeah, but I never had any refill packs. So,
right. Yeah, I had a Light Bright, but I must've had some refill packs because I kind of remember making pictures with some of the things. And the whole idea of the refill packs is of course in the main set, you probably got, I don't really remember, but in the main set, you probably got the same number of color, you know, like 10 reds, 10 purples, 10 blues, 10 greens, 10 yellows, and then you can make different things. But of course, if you want to, say, draw a picture in light pegs of, say, Batman or Superman, you're going to need a lot more blue. So that's what the refill is. So this is a Super Friends picture refill set. And on the it's got on the bottom, you see these two kids, and they're making a kind of weird-looking Batman with very red lips on the light bright. And above them is three stock art poses of Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. So yes, I'm angry. No Aquaman, no Robin. I'm guessing Aquaman. First of all, Aquaman was generally, of course, the one, the first character to be cut off of these things. But I'm sure that it was simply easier to do a refill set with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman because they're the same three colors, right? Yellow, blue, red. You didn't have to bother with orange and green for Aquaman. So that left Robin and Aquaman out. It is now the stock art. Obviously, the main image is of Batman, and it's that classic Carmen Infantino, Murphy Anderson pose where he's standing there with his hands on his hips. And there's the one of Wonder Woman, is that Murphy Anderson that shot?
Yeah, I think it's Murphy Anderson. I think he drew that when he was doing the corner cover.
The corner boxes, thing. Yeah.
But that one was never really used because Wonder Woman wasn't in her classic look at the time he did that.
Oh, right. That's right.
It's famously like on
– a lot of merch.
Yeah, a lot of merch. The sleeping bag, the Pepsi glass, the moon glass, things like that. Yeah.
They had the wall appliques, those stickers that you can get. They had that. So, and then on the left is a pose of Superman that I don't actually – recognize. It's not Murphy Anderson, and it's weirdly colored in that from it's hard to see. The scan is not the greatest quality in the world, but it looks like Superman's neck is colored blue.
Yeah,
like he's got it like it, so he kind of looks like what he does in like the New 52 outfit or something.
He's got, right? That Nehru, Jim Lee Nehru collar. Yeah,
exactly.
That Superman image, to my knowledge, originated, it's by Kurt Swan, and I think it's inked by Vince Coletta, but it's actually inked
really
well. Yeah, it's actually inked well by Vince Coletta.
Okay.
And that was used – the first time I remember seeing it was – you remember Parade magazine that came in newspapers? Well, Parade had an article written by Mort Weisinger, I think, in the 70s when Superman the movie came out, so 78. And there was a lovely, like, semi-painted image of Superman – you know, it had all these different, I don't know if it was actually painted, but there was all these different color tones and in it, it looked more like a painting than your average comic book art. And this is that same exact pose of the Superman. And I had that for years because my mom cut it out and I had it on my wall and I kept it in a scrapbook. I don't know what ended up happening, but if you look for Superman Parade magazine, I think you'll find it. But, and this head of this Superman was actually used on those NASTA games that we brought up earlier on For All Merch Kind. So they took the head of Superman and popped it on that. So
never throw anything away. Yeah. So that's the light bright set. If I ever had any of the refills, I probably had this one because my parents would have thought, you know, he would have liked this one. I don't really remember. I didn't do a deep dive of like how deep into the like a licensing light bright went. Like, I don't think there was like a Star Wars light bright set or anything like that. I think they kind of went with slightly more generic stuff. But the other thing that I thought it was worth talking about was I found on, I think it was a Pinterest, and you'll see this picture on the website, FrightWaterPodcast.com, on the gallery page, is the box that this thing, the display box that light bright sent out with this thing. It's a cardboard box and it's just like two colors. It's black and yellow. But what's interesting is on the front, we've got a little bit of Mego flavoring here because we're mixing characters. On the left-hand side, it says Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And on the right, we've got Spider-Man and the Hulk. And so obviously there must have been a Marvel Light Bright refill set. And it's interesting. We don't have this picture up on the website, but you can find it online. On either side of the box, on the left-hand side, it says Super Friends. For Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, and on the right for Hulk and Spider-Man says superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they were, even though that we all know DC and Marvel copyrighted the superheroes, they shared it. That term, obviously the Super Friends was a big money making merchandise thing. So that's what they went for. But I thought it was interesting that this is something that, you know, after not too many years, you would never see again. Characters intermixed on a piece of merchandise.
Right. Yeah. This is 1980. So this is right when that was coming to an end. I mean, the 70s, Marvel and DC let that happen. But, you know, I don't know if it was because, you know, things started getting frosty between them over the JLA Avengers crossover. I don't know. But yeah, it is interesting. And there is a Marvel, you can see the, if you do a Google search, you can find the Hulk Spider-Man one, and it just says, it doesn't even say Marvel superheroes, it just says superheroes. And and it's really interesting how DC, like, you know, they, when they used the Super Friends brand and when they didn't, it was because this is not Super Friends centric artwork on this package, but yet they call it Super Friends when they could have called both of them superheroes, you know.
Yep.
So it's interesting. And another thing that I think's kind of neat, and I, like, again, where I didn't have any light bright refills, I guess there's like a template that you lay over top of your light bright screen, because there's one of Superman with his hands on his hips that, you know, if you do an image search on Google, you'll find, and it's like, then that shows you where to put the pegs to build this figure.
So you don't make some janky Superman.
Right. So it's like a stencil, basically, you know, right, to lay over top. And I guess it, of course, it lines up with the holes, but it eliminates, it only shows you the holes that you would use to
right,
illustrate Superman with the pegs. And another fun thing about Light Bright, which I think is funny, those ceramic Christmas trees that have the little, you know, you put a light bulb up inside of it. It's got a stand with a light bulb in it, and you set the ceramic tree over top of it. And it's got all these little colored they almost look like little candle flames, you know, we've got some here. We had them when I was a kid. They've kind of come back in the last few years. I remember as a kid, those little things would get lost, and we would fill them in with light bright pegs because they worked, you know, they looked very similar. So it's like, that was another use for light bright. So
really we're MacGyvering it, you know, early on in Christmas. That's great. That's
right.
Fantastic. I had a light bright. I only seem to recall having it in our house in Pennsylvania, which was in the 70s. So I'm betting that was my sister's toy that I maybe inherited or something. Because I don't – at the point that I was old enough to have toys, I was already Nego and Star Wars. I don't think that I got a whole lot of entertainment out of light bright, you know, because it was like plink, 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 done. All right. Right. All right, now what? You know,
I was much more of a color forms guy. If you were going to do this sort
of
thing,
totally. Yeah. So, but you know, they had their moment, Light Bright, and I certainly remember that song very well. So, yeah, I just thought it was interesting that this was, as you point out, 1980, probably one of the very last gasps of the Marvel and DC characters ever going to be intermingled on a piece of merchandise. So, and I'm guessing that, you know, the Hulk Light Bright, it's all just green pegs. Like, it's all just green. You know,
interesting that Captain America didn't get included. So, like, I mean, because you've already got the red and the blue for Spider-Man. Why didn't they throw, you know, Cap was usually, if there was, you know, at first it was Spidey and Cap, and then when the Hulk got a TV show, it was the three of them. But then as the 80s come in, it was like, I guess after the Red Brown movies didn't go over enough to get him a series, Cap was, you know, kicked to the wayside, I guess.
The Doctor Strange Light Bright refill pack. 40 million colors.
Peter Hooten, yeah.
I got orange, I got magenta, I got to do the cape. Oh my God, it's taking me forever.
I need more pegs for his fro. I can't quite make it.
You can borrow them from the Ronald McDonald set probably or something.
There you go.
Anyway, that's the Super Friends Light Bright set. So Chris, thank you once again for joining me for a segment for All Merch Kind. I missed doing this last couple episodes, so it's always great to have you back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure, Rob. And again, I really appreciate, you know, when I see something I've never seen before. I mean, I had Etch-a-Sketch refills of Batman and Wonder Woman from around this time, but I had no idea that they made Light Bright. So, this is great.
All right, everybody. So, again, that's going to do it. I want you to stay tuned for some commercial announcements. And then when I'm back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
I know it's heartbreaking to have your favorite shows preempted, but look what you're getting instead.
JLU Cast brings you Justice League Season 2.
Woo! Back in business.
The Justice League faces their greatest foes.
This is a chance to rid ourselves of the League once and for all.
Darkseid.
Brainiac.
Dr. Destiny.
Lex Luthor.
Amazo.
Vandal Savage.
Eclipso.
The Joker.
Harley Quinn.
The Royal Flush Gang.
The Secret Society of Supervillains.
And themselves?
Dale UCast Season 2, available on iTunes and Apple Podcasts and at FireAndWaterPodcast.com.
Always have to be the hero, don't you? Right back at you.
All right, and now I'm back with listener feedback, and this is the feedback we got for the previous episode of For All Mankind, which was episode 12, with my guest, Terry O'Malley, who you just heard on the show. So we're going to get to the comments on the website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. First up is Brian Rosen, who says, at the risk of crossing show streams, I never had mountain comics, but I did have boating comics. My dad had a small boat when I was growing up, and the family went fishing most weekends. While it was fun for my brother and father, I always got seasick, so I would bring a book or comic along to enjoy and focus on while the boat rocked back and forth. This was one of the comics I would bring along. If I could share a pic of the actual issues, you would see that it was well-read and much loved. That's really great, Brian. I mean, I'm sorry that you got seasick, but that's cool that you found a solution to the seasickness, and also you've got a chance to read. That sounds fantastic. I love it. Boating comics. That's a It's a fun idea. Thank you. Matt Saroy says, wow, TNT and Dan the Dynamite. Maybe after vanishing from the pages of DC, they joined up with the Earth One versions of Wildcat and Greg Saunders Vigilante and did some Wildcat prospecting in the American Southwest and found their fortune in silver. Then they lived happily ever after. It was interesting to hear that Terry worked at the New England Aquarium. Anyone who grew up watching WLVI TV 56 out of Boston knows the New England Aquarium, even if they've never been. What a giant turtle. Look how close they are. I can walk like a penguin. Hey, Mom, the Dolphin Show. Thank guys for a great episode. Thank you, Matt. The administrator says, another great episode. I always look forward to these, as his website has been referred to a lot in various network episodes. I want to mention Mike's Amazing World fanboy section, where Mike breaks down the various confusing Earth 1, Earth 2 character breakdowns. As a TNT and Dan, he talks about them here, and then the administrator provides a link in the comments. So you can check that out. That's fun. I didn't know that Mike had that. It is an amazing site. I've said this on numerous shows. All podcasters that do comic-related stuff, I think, owe Mike's Amazing World a debt of gratitude. We should, like, throw that site some money or something on a monthly basis, because it's just so much research is done through that site. But that's cool. I didn't know that page exists. I'll have to check that out, of how ENB reconciled all this. Dr. Ann says, fun episode. As I have said, I collected a smattering super friends, but not all. So hearing about these issues is a blast. I mostly knew TNT and the Dynamite Kid from Young All-Stars. So hearing this story, maybe this is Earth Haney and their sad fate was wild. I also have to admit sheepishly that Jaina is quite fetching in this issue. Quite fetching indeed. And yes, Matt, I remember that commercial completely. Terry has had such fun jobs. Aquarium, Museum of Science, musician, way more hip than me. That's true. Terry's hipper than most of us. Chris Franklin from our network, and of course, who you just heard here on the show, says, always a pleasure to hear Terry on the network. I have never owned or read this issue, so I don't know when I first learned TNT and Dan appeared in Super Friends, but my first reactions are probably why and how. This does seem to violate the Superboy slash man was the first superhero on Earth One rule, so it surprises me that ENB would go there, being DC's unofficial official Superman historian. Seeing Ramona Freyden draw the Dynamite duo makes me realize how much they look like the Phantom, just like Menagerie Man. And it's okay, Rob, looking at the pages in the gallery, I couldn't help but think, wow, Jaina is cute. I think most of us listening were younger than Jaina, whether she was 15 or 18 when we first encountered her, so it also helps to cut down on the ick factor. She'd be older than all of us now. I don't recall having a big crush on Jaina, but I did on just about every Filmation female, from Batgirl to Teela. Thank you, Chris. Edo Boznar says, not to get too far ahead on this, but there is a backup story in a later issue of Super Friends in which Xan and Jaina are shown attending high school. So they're supposed to be younger than 18 for sure. Captain Entropy fills in and he says, Edo, I think we're all pretending that doesn't exist so we can feel better about ourselves. Again, very true, Captain. Little Russell Burbage says, there's an issue of Action Comics circa 1976 where several Superman lookalikes and men who have pretended to be Superman were all on the Johnny Carson show. Dr. Light assumes one of them is the real Man of Steel and attempts to kill all of them. It's pretty cool, even though it doesn't actually feature either Prince Mark, if I recall correctly, or Van Z. That sounds awesome. Martin Gray comes in and he says that Mort Weinziger would say in letter calls to readers questioning the existence of all these doubles that statisticians say everyone on Earth has at least 17 doubles. So how many must be out there in the universe? Yeah, sure, Mort. I've never heard of the 17 doubles. I feel bad for 16 other men out there, I have to say. But boy, you know, Russell, that sounds so fun. I'm a big fan of Johnny Carson. I always was. And I like it when he shows up in comics because he was so prevalent in the culture. It's hard for people to understand that now because it's been so long since he's been gone, but he was the guy. And so when he shows up in a comic book, I always kind of grin a little. He showed up in an Aquaman issue, and of course you know that, Russell. And but that I have to read that story. That sounds really fun. Brian Linton chimes in with some Johnny Carson stuff. He says, Johnny Carson and a bunch of Superman lookalikes, sold. Yeah, exactly. You're on there with me, Brian. Cellar Dweller says, hello, everyone. Rob, thanks so much for another great episode. I eagerly look forward to them each month. Since it's been discussed numerous times that the color scheme for villains is green and purple, shall we discuss the cover of number 12? TNT, the assumed villain, is drawn in atomic green against a purple background. Nice catch, Cellar. Regarding Aquaman and his telepathic abilities, we will see him using his telepathy on other animals and super friends, similar to number 6, where he communicated with walruses when fighting the Menagerie Man. One of my favorite aspects of this issue is that we see Xan and Jaina actually in training. In the cartoon, they are constantly talking about training and wanting to be real superheroes, but we never really see them actually training. Yeah, that's true. Chuck, that's, again, a nice catch. But yeah, I did enjoy that aspect of the story quite a bit. Nice way to open it. It's just like, okay, they're doing training. Now we can get to the main story. Russell Burbage comes back with another comment. He says, another great episode. I agree with Terry that the story was good, but proved to be unsatisfying. Too much buildup. And then what? The two poor slobs are separated again, seemingly forever. What was the point? I did like seeing that the Wonder Twins training with the Super Friends, and I sometimes wondered why Wendy and Marvin weren't featured in the same way. They should have been taught how to box or to spar too, right? I don't recall them ever being used in that way. Yeah, no, they never were. Maybe, some Burbo realized that he had made that mistake with the Wonder Twins. I mean, part of it was three whole issues were devoted to that giant story against where they were fighting Drax, and there probably wasn't a lot of room, but maybe Ian B. realized if they're in training – we should show them in training. Maybe that's something he figured he could correct the mistake that he'd made with Marvin and Wendy and do that with the Wonder Twins. The administrator comes back and says, one more thought that just came to me. We have a contrast between two dynamic duos who touch their hands to gain powers. One set turns into facets of nature, the other into destructive energy. A subtle message, perhaps? Another good catch, Nick Mishra. Thank God for this feedback segment. You guys are catching all sorts of things I missed. Martin Gray, again, a lot of duplicate comments here. Says, I was buying Super Friends monthly by the time this one came out and enjoyed seeing some heroes I heard about only on some ENB text page in Secret Origins or wherever, but found the ending downbeat like most everyone else here. Two best pals are free from imprisonment after decades, only to be split up and made into subhuman bombs. They deserved a speedy sequel. Given the hotness of the Wonder Twins in this issue, how do we interpret the ecstatic look on Aquaman's face as Zan gives him a special shower? Martin. Sean Meyer says, welcome to the podcast. Terry, it was great to hear from you in this episode. I look forward to hearing you on the next episode as well. Although as a character, I like Robin more than Aquaman. Sorry, Rob. I don't really think that Robin would be able to outspeed Aquaman on land, as shown on page 12. I'm surprised that Rob didn't stick up for this mistake. Big grin. God, everybody's really giving me grief in this feedback segment. As anyone who listens to this show probably knows, I love with 10 O's the Super Friends comic. However, that being said, this is one of my least favorite issues. The only things I like about this issue are the training session being shown, Ramona's art, and the last panel of Dr. Mist. All that to say, I'm so happy that this podcast exists. Although this issue is kind of a dud for me, but listening to the podcast and then reading all the comments, I have now enjoyed the story, even if it's only because of all the bonus material. Doug the Dynamite says, good Lord, a flying man. I don't get it. These two World War II mystery men were kept in bunkers, but there was no reason for, you know, news to have been withheld from them for all that time. A copy of the Daily Planet with their meal so they could read about these new superpowered guys battling evil out there? I guess that couldn't be arranged. Hope these two at least got word that the good guys won the war and stuff. James Roberts says, the Golden Age provides an alternate story of what happens to Dan Dunbar, although not one that can fit with the events of the Super Friends story. That reminds me that DC has a Golden Age crime fighter named Tex Thompson, while TNT's name is Tex Thomas. Maybe it's just me, but I often have to differentiate between these two Texes mentally when I come across one or the other of them in the comics. It doesn't help matters that Thompson used multiple costume identities. If there's a third Tex T in DC that I don't know about, please don't tell me about him. I don't want to know. Ward Hill Terry, you just heard, left a comment, and he says, thanks for inviting me to the Hall of Justice, Rob, and thanks for encouraging comments, Super Friends. I wanted to touch on a couple things I said in the podcast. First, in talking about the future appearance of TNT, I said the book was Super Team Family. That was wrong. It's Superman Family, number 190. My brain regrets the error made by my mouth. Secondly, I tried to foreshadow part of my discussion by mentioning a certain panel, but then we never discussed that panel. In the penultimate panel on the last page, Superman mentions a recent fight with the Parasite. That was in Superman 321, 322. What I wanted to discuss was how E. Nelson Burwell acknowledged specific stories currently happening in the DC universe. As a young reader, I was often annoyed at how some events would never be mentioned in other books. Did any Justice Leaguer ever express their sympathies to Aquaman for the loss of his child on panel, etc.? Yeah, Terry, I wondered about that myself. I don't think there's a single panel in any Justice League comic where any of the members acknowledge what happened to Aquaman over in his solo book. And you think that would be kind of something worth mentioning. It always bugged me a little bit. It's like, geez, anybody want to put their hand on Arthur's shoulder and say, sorry about that or anything? I don't know. But yeah, I agree that it was nice of ENB to mention that, to, you know, be sort of cognizant of what was going on in the greater line and to throw a reference in this issue of Super Friends. And then finally, the last comment is from Paul Kien. He says, another great episode. Although I felt the issue itself was a little meh, I laughed out loud twice. Once when Jaina turned into an elephant seal, even more so than when Zan refreshed Aquaman. Ick. Also not reading ahead, but I know that the Global Guardians are coming. So I was very excited to see Dr. Mist. Well, Paul, you'll have to let me know what you think of this issue where Dr. Mist is all over the place and his awesome mountaintop cave of doom or whatever it is. So that is going to do it for the feedback. Thanks so much. For All Mankind gets a ton of feedback. It's sort of amazing, really, considering the show is so brand new and we're talking about a comic that a lot of people haven't necessarily read, but I really appreciate it. It's great to see all these comments come in, and I love being able to read them back on the show. So thanks, everybody. So that is going to do it for this episode of For All Mankind. Big thanks to Terry O'Malley for coming back and doing part two of the story. And a big thanks to my pal Chris Franklin for doing another For All Merch Kind segment with me. Those are always fun. If you want to follow the show, you go to the website, firewaterpodcast.com, or you can subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or Amazon Music. We're always talking super friends over on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. And then finally, if you want to support the Fire and Water Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW Podcasts. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big salute to Chuck Dill and Stanford M. Brown for their support of For All Mankind. I really appreciate it, fellas. So that is going to do it for this episode. That's going to do it for the year of 2020. We're all happy to have this year over with. We'll be back in 2021 next month with a brand new episode. So thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we'll be looking at Super Friends number 14, Elementary.
An FW TV podcast.